Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a problem for a cereal. A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy to have you with us here on this Friday, and it's not just Friday, and it's not just football Friday. You know what it is now? It's the Dunn Tire Drive at 5 is what this is, and that is presented by Dunn Tire, the official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and brought to you by Northwest Bank for what's next. To get started at northwest.com, and by Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Sideline with a sprain, strain, or break, get to Excelsior Orthopedics Express. Nate Geary in for Mike today. I am the Bulldog, and joining us for the Drive at 5 here on the West Her Hotline is our buddy Matt Perino from the Shout Podcast and Syracuse.com. Matt, what's going on, bud?
Not much. How are you guys?
We are awesome. Broad strokes, how do you feel about Bills Colts? Are you a little uneasy because it's the week before the Chiefs and the Bills are kind of on cruise control in the division? Or is this like a business road trip type of approach for you?
I mean, 4 weeks ago, I probably would have been a little bit more concerned even with the Pittman development. But to watch them go on the road against Seattle the way that they did, and I know they were down DK Metcalf, but I think you can make an argument that maybe not as important, but pretty close, Pittman to Indy's offense is pretty important. They kind of become a little bit one-dimensional, especially with the lack of mobility for Joe Flacco. We saw that him really struggle in that department against Minnesota, and I think the Bills have a couple of answers. I think this is a big Von Miller game, right? Like, you know, he's supposedly healthy. You know, if you get a lead early in this game and you get him kind of rushing Joe Flacco, this could be a spot where he can make a huge impact. And then defensively, I think the most important thing for me is getting Christian Benford back in this spot is huge. Not only what he means to the pass defense, but also like how willing of a tackler and problem he is in the run defense. I mean, I think Jonathan Taylor is probably going to find a lane or two in this game. And I think that secure tackling, reliable tackling on the second and third level is going to be so critical in this game. And it's funny, don't look now, but DeMar Hamlin has kind of flipped the script a little bit on what we saw people talking about him through the first four games. And I think he'd even tell you he didn't have a great game against Baltimore. But I think that he's settled into the role, and he's, you know, been a nice last line of defense over the last couple of weeks. He'll be tested, though, against Taylor.
How do you feel about Flacco versus Richardson? Nate and I were, I don't know, arguing about it. We disagreed about it anyway. It didn't get really heated. I feel like Flacco, for all his experience and stuff, I don't think McDermott is going to be able to really, and Babich are going to be able to really confuse him. It doesn't mean he'll, you know, not throw you the ball anyways. But I feel like I would have rather faced the inexperienced kid. I feel like Babich and McDermott would have eaten Richardson up.
So maybe I'm more in line with Nate. Like, from everything I've read and listened to, I don't think you want to deal with the run game of Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor. It's kind of like the poor man's version of Lamar and Derrick Henry, because they could do so many different things with it. And if you look at the strength and weaknesses of the Bills' defense, the big weakness has been their inability to stop the run. So if you go on the road and you get up early and you play like you did in Seattle a couple weeks ago, fine. But if you don't, and now they're able to really start gouging you in the run game, and Jonathan Taylor gets going, and, you know, Richardson starts doing some things or maybe find some confidence, that's a huge problem for the Bills. So I think with Flacco, you know exactly who he's going to try to be. He'll probably run some play action too, but they're going to bend, but they're not going to break. And their big play guy, I know Alex Pierce has made a couple of them over the course of the season. Mitchell has sprinkled in a couple as well, the rookie. But, I mean, Pittman's the guy that really, at that second level, is the guy that makes a lot of the big plays. So, I don't know. I just think this offense becomes a little bit more one-dimensional with Flacco. You're right. They probably won't be able to surprise him as much. But I think on that offensive line, especially up front, like if you're looking for a game for this interior to finally get going, and I think Quentin Jefferson and Jordan Phillips at the very least give you some possible a surprise factor in terms of like maybe they get three or four snaps where they get a little pressure on Joe Flacco. That offensive line crumbled last week in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. I mean, they could not block anybody. And so I think over the course of this game, if you can get to Flacco, if you can make things money, maybe force a turnover or two, you're in a good spot. And I think they're banged up. I don't think this is as good of a – like their defense, while there's some good players on it, especially on the defensive line, I think overall they've been kind of a disappointing team. And then the offense, the one big game they had with Flacco was against Jacksonville, which is like the second worst pass defense in the NFL.
So, Matt, you spoke a little bit about maybe not the development of DeMar Hamlin, but his kind of growing presence, his familiarity with the defense, and he's been looking more and more comfortable each and every week. What have your thoughts been about Dorian Williams coming into this season, maybe not expecting to be the every-down player he's been? I think they've been putting him in some better situations, subbing him out on third down, obvious passing situations. He still, to me, every game has like one or two plays where he just... I don't know if it's a brain fart. It's just like there's just a couple of plays a game. But otherwise, you know, Matt, he's been a very consistent, a producer in this defense. And I've been, I would say, pleasantly surprised at where his game is right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the toughest part for Dorian Williams was being the guy that comes in at weak side linebacker a year after what we saw Terrell Bernard do at the middle linebacker spot. So the expectations probably were so high. You know, Tremaine Edmonds, for all of his faults, had a pretty good run in Buffalo. And then you have Bernard, who comes in year one and, you know, outshines everything that the guy did in 4 or 5 years in one season. And Matt Milano is about as trustworthy, productive, and fan favorite of a player as you can get with the Bills over the last couple of years. With him out, there's been a little bit of up and down at times for Dorian Williams, but the good has been great, and you're really excited about that. I think some of the area where my concern with him is just recognition in the run game, and that's a part where if you can get any kind of 80 or 90% version of Matt Milano back in a couple of weeks, that is where I think it helps the most in the run game. I know that, like, Dorian has some issues in coverage too, but I've actually noticed a few plays in the games where the Bills have struggled against the run where it's, I don't know if it's recognition, I don't know if it's slow to the ball, I'm not grinding the all 22 like a lot of folks do, but it just seems like they could use that Matt Milano explosive presence in the way that he reads blockers, the way that he splits blocks, and the way that he becomes a problem in the backfield at the line of scrimmage. They need a little bit more stops consistently. And I don't know if Matt Milano could come back and be a guy that plays, 80% of the snaps or whatever it ends up being, but I think that if he can be that factor, that will help and take a little bit of the pressure off Dorian Williams. But to your earlier point, I think you're glad that this opportunity has been given to him, and I think that he's grown a lot. It's different for everybody. People forget about Taron Johnson, and I know you don't, Nate or Chris. Like, he got benched. Like, it's that little, blip in his career that we don't really talk about now because he's this all-pro, every-year, consistent producer. But Cam Lewis, of all people, was put in at slot corner for him when he was having a bit of a tough spell, and the way that he responded since has been the stuff of legend. So, even if Dorian Williams has this kind of, a string of good games, and then maybe one where it's not as good, that's still pretty good for year two for a third-round draft pick, and I think the arrow's still pointing up.
Longtime Bills beat reporter Matt Perino on the Wester Hotline with us, also co-host or host of the Shout podcast with Ryan Talbot. How do you feel going into this about, considering Jonathan Taylor, they don't have the threat of Richardson running. Like, I wonder how quickly the Bills will be ready to pivot personnel-wise if they have a tough time with Taylor. I know, you know, that style-wise, they invite the run. They want to take, you know, take away the long stuff, and that's been really McDermott's calling card, regardless of whose name is in the is on the defensive coordinator's door. I wonder if you could see them, you know, mixing in some different looks if they have a tough time early with Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, one idea that I think they always have in their back pocket, which they've never been really willing to lean into, is moving Greg Rousseau inside at times, where he had a lot of success in college. But he's so good as a run defender at setting the edge that it's this kind of catch-22. If you move him inside, can you count on two guys in the run game? Epenesa is pretty consistent. There's been times where it hasn't been great. And now with Dwan Smoot out, you don't really have that edge setter. You know, in years past, the guy that really did a good job of playing that role, the stats were never great, but Shaq Lawson, I thought, did a nice job in that department. Now with like a Javon Solomon and Von Miller, who basically they've said, Sean McDermott has come out and said they can't even put him on the field in first and second down in some games against some teams that have good run games. And that's the thing that you fear. So it's like you got to put the Colts in a situation where you get to up to a lead early, and now they're forced to pass so you can use your personnel that you can trust. I think that there's, you know, one kind of side storyline that I think is going to be really interesting to track over the next couple of weeks is when Quentin Jefferson was here the first time, I thought he was misused a lot. Like they had him at like the nose backup spot behind Star Lotulelei. And I thought that he was better utilized than what we saw with the Jets last year, where they had him at the three tech on third down. Occasionally they pushed him outside. I think he could do a little bit of that with the Bills defense and maybe fill in to that Smoot role. Mm-hmm. Now that they look back and saw how poorly it went the first time around and the success he's had since, maybe a light went off and we'll see that. I'm interested to see how much he plays and how they use him on Sunday.
The Smoot role. I like that. That's a potential fantasy football team name, I think, Smoot Roll. Matt Parrino on the Western Hotline with us. So flipping it around on offense, I mean, we know the Bills are at least going to be down Keon Coleman. Feels like they could be down Amari Cooper, too. So your receiving core is pretty well compromised. With that in mind, we know the Bills have liked the idea of running the ball and have been effective doing it this year. Do you think this is a pretty heavy Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis day?
Oh, big time. And this is one of those games, and I don't know if it, you know, Ty Johnson, man, it's so hard to argue against him getting the workload that he's gotten. And maybe at times you could say he runs so well and consistently and what he does on third down, get him on the field a little bit more. But I'd like to see Joe Brady in a game like this. And I know, well, I don't know, but I surmise that a lot of the lack of creativity at times is probably trying to keep a couple aces in the hole as the season goes along. There's some big games against the Chiefs and the Niners and the Lions and the Rams, and maybe trying not to show too much of what you want to do. But we have barely, if at all, seen Ray Davis and James Cook on the field together. Like, go back to when they drafted Cook. Wasn't the big, you know, part of that Brandon Bean saw him as a guy that you can put the defense in a bind in, putting him out in different spots in the rotation. And, of course, Cook does line out on the outside at times, but maybe even making him like a de facto slot receiver and putting Cook in the backfield. And with Reggie Gilliam out this week, maybe using some fun motions to get the defense off of, you know, off of the scent, if you will, and see if they can't catch him by surprise and get these guys out in space, whether it be in the run game or the pass game. So I do think that it's going to be a heavy run-oriented game, and maybe if it's not all running, how do you get the ball in these guys' hands in the passing game? Because all three of them, and they've done a good job building that room because they're interchangeable in that way with the way that you can use them, and I think Brady has to love that.
Zooming out here quite a bit, Matt, Nate and I had a good time yesterday in part discussing how our perspectives, how we feel about this Bills season has changed from, say, you know, before it started to now that we're 9 games in and they sit at 7-2. How would you answer that? Like, are your expectations being exceeded, being met? Like, you know, how do you feel about this team 9 games in versus how you felt in August?
they're being met, and I say that because I picked them to win 12 games, to win a division. I'm well on record with my pessimism for this New York Jets Super Bowl run that everybody was selling since March.
You and me both.
And the Miami Dolphins are a little bit surprising, but you got to take into account that Tua missed four games. So if he doesn't miss those games, they're probably closer to 500 and a little bit more in this race. So I guess like the biggest part of the surprise is that the Bills are so far ahead at this point. But with the tough part of the schedule, you know, getting ramped up here over the next couple of weeks, this could be a completely different picture in a month. But I do think in terms of who they are on both sides of the ball, I think Joe Brady has done a nice job of leaning into, you know, making it boring, right, for Josh Allen, operating in that short and intermediate passing game, getting the screen game going, the personnel that they brought in, Keon, and then obviously Shakir, the holdover, really being elite run-after-the-catch options for Josh Allen, which is something they've been trying to add to this offense for years. It's played out. Defensively, do they have enough up front? I think they're good in the back seven. I've been higher on the safety since training camp than I think the average Bills fan or media member has been. But that's not to say that this is an elite group of safeties. I just think that they're good enough to do the job, especially considering, like, nostalgia sometimes makes people forget. I like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde as much as anybody else. Love talking to them all those years in the locker room. They weren't the same players last year. They weren't at the same part of this defense, and I think part of the reason the Bills were eliminated, you know, you can, you know, put some of that on both of those guys, and obviously up front as well. But I think what they've built now, if they can get Carter back, Smoot back down the line in December, you know, they can make a real run at a Super Bowl. And Cooper, to me, feels like this year's version of Rasul Douglas. It always felt like they were going to need something else. And I think he is a great, specifically, like, the addition, it's more than just what he brings as a receiver. It's the style of person that he is, for lack of a better term. He's the complete opposite of Stephon Diggs, which is, like, they've been running away from that version of the player in the receiver room for a while, maybe even before they traded him. And now they have the antithesis of that, but a guy that could still be an elite route runner, separator when healthy. There's a lot to like about this thing, and I still don't think that they've really truly found or allowed Dalton Kincaid to fly like he could probably fly in this offense. So there's a lot to like, but we'll learn a lot more in the next month. The Chiefs, the Niners, the Lions, tough games.
By the way, both of you guys, those Jets Super Bowl T-shirts, they're gonna be great for some third world country that they get sent to in February. The last thing I wanted to ask you, Matt, was it's interesting to me when you're looking at this Bills offense, how dramatically different that they are this year than they even were in the second half of last year under Joe Brady, but obviously under Ken Dorsey, and even starting to revert back to some of what I think a lot of people were missing when Brian Daboll left for New York. And I want to maybe parse this by saying they're not leaning on Josh Allen, the runner, anymore. And they found ways to, you know, find success on the ground, be a top 10, top 12 running team without needing Josh Allen to have designed runs. And, you know, you get one a game and a scramble two here and there. And I know a lot of people are looking at maybe the week one hand injury. That's where, but like, they're going to have to be able to pull this out. I think the ideal situation has always been, Matt, that they could at some point pull out the designed runs and the Allen runner when it mattered in December and January, and they're actually doing it.
And what's the greatest potential answer to the way that teams have, the elite teams have defended Josh Allen over the last couple of years, is almost convincing them that part of his game isn't what you have to worry about anymore. Because once that happens, then it's going to flip back the other way. It's about the adjustments to the adjustments. And it's not just like in game or even in like in parts of the season. It's over the long game of the entire season. And I think, you know, there's been a couple of times where the offense has been figured out or the defense has been figured out. And right now, to your point, this is an offense that's almost impossible to figure out what it could truly be, because the version of it through nine games this year is such a departure to what it's been at different times. And I think the one argument would be, well, they don't have Stephon Diggs anymore, so they can't be this, like, elite, like, scary, over-the-top offense that's, you know, got this elite passing game. I still think that's in there somewhere with the players they have. And, you know, my player to watch this week with potentially Cooper and Coleman out is Curtis Samuel, because it's interesting that this everybody eats mentality or mantra has taken off. And it's like he's the only guy that hasn't gotten a chair at the table to eat some dinner, right? Like everybody right. else in this offense, including Quentin Morris, has found the end zone. He's the only guy that hasn't. And I'm wondering if this is the week now with all those other guys, you almost like need Curtis Samuel to be a dude in this game. And if they could unlock him somehow and like maybe like cut out all the motion with him. You got Virgil to do that, right? They added him to the 53-man roster. Yep. Let him run in motion. Let Samuel line up on the outside and do some of the stuff that he did not only in Carolina but in Washington too at times. And that's what Joe Brady pounded the table for to begin with, to get him here. Let him do those things, and hopefully from a Bills perspective, he's healthy enough to do it this week.
Excellent work, Matt. Big fan of the podcast. Thank you for making the time for us on a Friday afternoon or evening or whatever it is. I mean, it's dark out. I don't know. Excellent to have you on again, man. Always enjoy it.
Great to catch up, guys. Take care.
That is Matt Perino, Bills beat reporter for Syracuse.com and the host of the Shout podcast. He's also a part of that News 4 Buffalo Kickoff Live crew with our buddy Tim Graham and Josh Reed, etc. Anyway, all right, we'll take a timeout here. Last call for calls. I've got Paul Hamilton coming up at 6 here. We'll go over last night's really nice win for the Sabres in New York City against the Rangers. They host the Calgary Flames tomorrow afternoon at 1. So we'll shift to hockey and Paul at the top of the next hour. But have at it here. Last call for the week here at 803-0550. If you got a thought on Bills, Colts, this matchup, Jonathan Taylor, Flacco v. Richardson, the Bills receiver room, it's time to empty the tank, folks. Nate Geary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to you're listening to WGR. We'll be back in a snap. I almost missed it.
Damn it.
That was
weak. I know.
Be back in a snap here, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples. See? You need me. The official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, it's a line of scrimmage game, Sal. It is every week, but in particular this week. We've got to make sure we establish a line of scrimmage on the offensive side and make sure that, you know, defensively that we play really well at the line of scrimmage and good run fundamentals. So this is going to be a big challenge against a team that has played extremely well at home, and their losses, they've lost by 8 points or less. So a team that's used to playing complete full games, and we have to continue to prepare that way.
That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott from, I think that sounds like his appearance with Sal Capaccio earlier this morning on the Extra Point Show. McDermott is a weekly guest, 10:45. It floats, but sometime between 10 and noon, he's on every week with Sal. And it's a good listen because, if nothing else, you get the first word on who may be in or out. Like, if guys are ruled out. Oftentimes, where we first find out about that is with McDermott talking to Sal on that show. So we already know no Keon Coleman. That's a tough one. It might be a couple of weeks, maybe hope for him after the bye. I don't know. They're still sort of leaving the IR option out there. I guess it's feasible that something could happen between now and game time Sunday that makes them feel like he's probably going to miss four games. Let's just IR him and free up a roster spot. But so far they haven't done that. And I think the hope is that he won't actually miss four games. So hopefully that ends up being the case. The bigger issue for Sunday, not that Keon Coleman being out isn't a big issue, but we know it. It's definitive. He's out. Is Amari Cooper. Don't know like what's going to happen there, but the Bills receiving core is stretched pretty thin at this point. You take those two guys off the top of it. Again, that's not to assume Cooper will be out, but I don't know. I'm just one guy. I'm not optimistic. With the way the week has gone and seeing what the brace he was wearing on his hand looked like yesterday when he was limited in practice again, I feel like it's trending the wrong way there. I could be wrong, but if they both miss, you're talking about Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Jalen Virgil, Mac Hollins, and then another practice squad elevation, which is either Deion Kane or Terrell Shavers or KJ Hamler. That's your receiving core. I mean, I'm not busting on Matt Parrino by saying this, but when you're hoping to unlock Curtis Samuel as an answer for your passing game, I'm really worried about where we're at. And I wouldn't have thought that back in March when they signed him, or in August when the season was just ramping up. I remember talking in the summer, Nate, like, oh, he's got turf toe. What does that mean? Do they have another guy that can even do all the things they want him to do? And he's a ghost. I mean, he just does not exist.
Again, his name is Curt Samuel, as far as I is, because Curtis Samuel is not. I don't know. I still feel like there's got to be something. There's got to be an underlying injury. Something's going on that we're not all privy to, because it just doesn't make sense. He's not even providing the production he did last year in an offense that was not good. And he was the number three receiver in that offense last year. It's not like he was going from a team where he was the number one receiver. He's the number three, number four here, and he's not seeing any of similar production. It's been a disappointing signing, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I think one comparison you might have been hoping would be apt was he's Isaiah McKenzie, but just, you know, more, right? Just like more productive Isaiah McKenzie, like similar role, but we're just going to lean on it more. Jet sweeps and handoffs and bubble screens. And then, you know, oh, you think we're only going to use him like this? Oh, let's get him down the field because he still has decent speed. I mean, it just is not anything there. So, you know, 12 catches on the year is the number. 19 targets. I mean, just the snap count is bad. It's just been a brutal first half of the season for him.
If there's a time it's going to turn around, feels like it's now or never for him.
Right.
Now or never.
Yeah.
And if it's never, I don't think he sees year two of that contract, right?
I am inclined to agree with that. Yes.
Like, it just seems like another example of every year they tried to fill this role, and then they don't use the role. Like, it's like an important thing to them. We're going to bring back Isaiah McKenzie. And then who was it last year?
Well, Nyheim Hines was sort of similar.
And then who was last year? The punt return guy from Miami. I can't even remember his name.
Oh, Deontay Hardy.
Deontay Hardy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's even faced way faster than McKenzie.
Yeah. And he can play. He can do things. He can't. Nope.
It is the kind of thing, like, I'm not one whose faith in the organization gets shook relatively easily. Like, we're living through one of the greatest iterations of this football team we're ever going to see.
It's the second best decade of football this team will have had in its franchise history.
So, like, I find it hard to be like, oh, Bean can't draft. They have developed a ton of guys. Do they have their share of misses? Of course they do.
Everybody does.
Samuel is one that, and everything you just said about the history of their desire for that guy, right? Recognizing that Hines and Samuel aren't exactly running the same race. But it was a similar type of thing. We really want this. We value this. We want it. We think we need it. We're definitely going to use it. And then it's time to take the wrappers off. And like, well, what are we doing here? Did we really have a plan for this, or did someone just sort of, not to make waves, just like, not okay, sure, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, but in their heart of hearts are like, I don't have any idea what I'm gonna do with this guy, because it just doesn't make sense. You've got the connection between Brady and Samuel from Carolina to begin with, when Brady was first in the NFL, in between that stint at LSU, and it just doesn't really, I know it was after the stint at LSU, but anyway, the point is, you would think they would have found a way to launch this. And so, I don't know. If it does happen at some point, then a lot of us who are talking like I'm talking right now are going to go, oh, okay, so he was hurt then. And maybe that is just the simple explanation. He was never really 100%, so they slow played him until they felt like he was finally ready, and now here we go. I mean, I don't know. That just seems, I mean, we're 9 games in. We're not 2 games in. And I just feel like that feels like wishful thinking and far-fetched at this point. I feel like it's almost a total loss at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly has been so far for the money. Again, it's not astronomical money, but considering how economical-minded they were in this offseason, both with players leaving and dead money and with who they signed because of it, Samuel was a commitment for them. And I just, it still kind of blows my mind that it's just not getting off the air. Another thing that could shake you a little in a similar type way is how they have been using Kincaid. That has not felt like fully blooming at any point yet. And we're halfway through year two now. And so that's another guy that, you know, if you want to see someone step into the void created by a Coleman absence and a potential Cooper absence, how about Dalton Kincaid? How about like getting my athletic tight end freed up to do some things in this game against the Colts too? I mean, I respect that they're bad against the run, so the Bills might run it a lot in this game, and their personnel, especially at receiver being compromised, could lead you in that direction, but like Kincaid is certainly someone who's capable of having a big game. We just haven't really seen it at all yet. So I don't know. Maybe Sunday's a day for Dalton Kincaid.
I would welcome that.
I feel like that's more realistic than Samuel.
I will say though, their linebackers, you know, EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin are two very good pass defending zone linebackers. That defense may leave a little bit to be desired in the run game against the run, but man, EJ Speed has really turned into a nice piece of them. They had Shaq Leonard and Zaire Franklin, and it looked like they were going to have a wicked duo. And then Shaq Leonard, you got the injuries. He's done. He's retired out of the NFL. And this guy walked in and replaced them, and has been really, really good for Indianapolis. So if I were a betting man, I think you're going to need a receiver to step up. I think Khalil Shakir could end up with his biggest target share of the season, and he's coming off 2 weeks ago in Seattle where he had a really great game as well.
You are listening to the Duntire Drive at 5, part of our Football Friday coverage. We'll take a timeout here. We come back. Nate Geary and I will take a dash around the league and cover some of the big stories that are going on. And we'll see whether we're buying or selling or skeptical about Nico Collins being activated. I mean, he's activated. Whether he plays on Sunday is another thing. He just returned to practice today. We'll cover that and more right after this as we continue here on WGR. Us to take a dash around the league, everyone. Brought to you by Dash's Market, celebrating 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. Our outstanding fill-in producer today, Joe Kelly, just informed us that Dallas Cowboys have made the decision to put Dak Prescott on IR. It had to be trending that way, right? The hamstring is somewhat torn off the bone.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Sounds unfortunate.
That doesn't sound like something you just like, let me get some massage therapy, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks. So, big downer for Dallas. See if Trey Lance gets any kind of a look there. Cooper Rush is the backup, and he'll start in Prescott's stead there, but they've been just stashing Trey Lance, just sitting there. So that is
stashing is a word for it. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Wasting?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Rotting?
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think Nico Collins will play on Sunday?
I don't.
I cannot believe that you would bring a guy that's missed. He hasn't played since the Bills game.
Yep.
And he's been activated. Like they opened his practice window and just added him to the roster. So the threat of him playing, I think, is there. But do you, with a hamstring injury, miss all this time? Don't activate him for practice on Wednesday or Thursday. Wait until Friday, do it, and like let him have that workout. And like, okay, I get out there, kid. I can't imagine that.
No, I think he'll be out another week.
If you have him in fantasy, I would obviously monitor that. Sunday, they play Sunday night, right?
Yes, Sunday night against somebody good, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, Detroit. Detroit,
yes.
And Houston. Yeah.
Yes. That's Sunday night?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good game.
So you're in tough there if you're waiting on him, right? Like, Sunday night makes it a little hard. So I was going to say fantasy, you know, just try to pay attention. Well, obviously pay attention, but you might not know for sure whether he's inactive or not until all your 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock dudes have already had to be decided upon. So I guess that could be tough if you end up there. But those are a couple of pretty notable developments today. Prescott for the Cowboys on IR now, and Nico Collins activated. But first practice was just today after missing a number of weeks, and I'll be really surprised if he hangs in there. All right. Time for me to shift gears to hockey. Nate's going to bail. That sounds like I'm being pejorative about it. I'm not. Nate, thank you for the couple of days here. Really enjoyed
Always
it.
My pleasure, man.
All right.
Enjoy doing it.
Have yourself a weekend, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Cool beans.
We'll be doing some post-game action together.
We shall.
All right, good deal. So I'll hit a timeout here. Paul Hamilton straight ahead. Big win, nice win, quality win last night for Buffalo in New York against the Rangers. Pour over all that with Paul and get a little bit of a preview for tomorrow afternoon's game at home against Calgary. Hopefully I'm not a jinx because we're going to this game tomorrow, me and John Gale. So I hope that works out well for them and us. But we'll hit a timeout here and be back with Paul after this on WGR.